one to blame but myself for my failure or success. The challenge is to somehow stay in the frame of mind that allows me to remember that the little things done today matter. I'm appreciative of your sharing this process in a way that I can internalize to change my way of thinking and, more importantly, doing. This cannot be the flavor of the month for me. This must be a lifestyle change that I continue to develop and perfect. I'm under no illusion that old habits are easy to break. This, however, has allowed me to have a process as opposed to just a desire to improve. Clearly, Danny gets it. There are always roadblocks and setbacks in any worthwhile endeavor, and it's easy to use them as reasons, or rather excuses, why you're not able to complete the work that needs to be done. At times, you might even feel justified in your excuses. There may be certain circumstances beyond your control that derail you, insurmountable obstacles that no one in his or her right mind would expect you to overcome. When Dustin Carter was a young boy, he was rushed to the hospital with a rare blood disease. To save his life, the doctors had to amputate both of his arms and both of his legs. Can you imagine? I can't. I've had my share of challenges, but nothing like this. I can't begin to fathom the horror, waking up from surgery with no arms or legs. How do you not feel sorry for yourself, feeling like life has dealt you a bad hand? If anyone ever had a reason to feel sorry for himself, it was Dustin. The funny thing is that if Dustin felt that way, it wasn't for long. Not only did he not let his physical challenges hold him back, he learned to excel physically. Imagine waking up one day with no arms or legs, thinking about what you want to do in life. Of all the choices you have, wrestler would probably not be high on the list. Not so with Dustin. In fact, wrestling is what he chose to do. And through hard work and hours of training, he became a very accomplished wrestler. Dustin did more than just overcome his physical challenges, he destroyed them, and in the process, became an inspiration to millions of other people who face challenges of all sorts. Barriers? Really? When I think about what Dustin had to overcome, and I look at the things that I let hold me back, I'm embarrassed. What about you? What do you let stand in your way? Think about the barriers and obstacles that you've let keep you from your goals. Isn't it time that you stopped making excuses and letting things stand between you and the life you want to have? The life you are currently living is a result of the choices you've made. You can blame the circumstances, your upbringing, your family, the schools you attended, your boss or the politicians. The fact is, you don't control any of that. What you control is how you respond. Being accountable is not easy, and at times it's very unpleasant. But if you are serious about your goals, you must take ownership of your situation. Taking ownership means that you stop looking outside yourself. Stop letting all those things keep you from living the life you desire, the life you are capable of. In the end, nobody outside of a few close friends really cares if you succeed or not. You can make all the excuses you want. The world doesn't care. As harsh as that sounds, it's the truth. Oh, you may from time to time get a little sympathy, and maybe if you're really lucky, a free beer, but that's about it. Giving away your power will never create the success you long for. Resolve right now to never again let excuses get in the way of you achieving your goals. Actions to create greater accountability in your life. Here are four things you can do to foster greater accountability and get more of what you want in life. 1. Resolve never to be the victim again. You cannot achieve a life of significance if you continue to give your power away. Make a decision to never be the victim again. Notice when you are making excuses and settling for mediocrity. Focus on the things you can control. Accountability is first a mindset, then an action. To live your vision, take ownership of your thinking, actions, and results. 2. Stop feeling sorry for yourself. Feeling sorry for yourself produces nothing but self-pity, and if you do enough of it, depression. It's okay to be disappointed and sad when things don't go your way, but don't let that linger and turn into self-pity. Learn to manage your thinking and your attitude. 3. Be willing to take different actions. If you want different results, then you need to be willing to do things differently and do different things. As my friend Lou Cassera, author of From Selling to Serving, says, if you want something you don't currently have, you need to do something you're not currently doing. Taking action will not only change your outcomes, it will also change your attitude. I've found that when I'm feeling discouraged, one of the quickest ways to change my outlook is by taking action. 4. Associate with accountables. There is a proverb that says, "He who walks with the wise grows wise." Who you associate with matters. Stay away from victims and excuse makers. Treat that mindset like a deadly, contagious disease. Nurture relationships with people who are accountable. If you have important people in your life that are excuse makers, be a positive influence. Have them read this chapter and model accountability. Everybody, sooner or later, sits down to a banquet of consequences. Robert Louis Stevenson. Take a few minutes right now to capture any actions that you would like to take to create more accountability in your life and your business. Thinking shift. Accountability is a massive thinking shift. As we've discussed, our society views accountability as consequences. Accountability is not consequences, it's ownership. It is the realization that even though you don't control the circumstances, you do control how you respond. It is the understanding that the quality of your choices determines the quality of your life. It is the recognition that in any situation, you always, always, always have choice. The choices you have in a given situation may not be very attractive, but you still have choices, and that is an important and empowering distinction. How you think about accountability affects everything. Team application. The long-term benefits of accountability are clear. Better results and an increased sense of control, less stress, and a greater general sense of well-being for organizations as well as individuals. Imagine a scenario where the culture of your company embraces accountability, where accountability is viewed as positive, and where associates willingly agree to accountable relationships. Consider the possibility of an organization where instead of having to hold people accountable, that accountability is simply a part of the way everyone operates. Leaders need to move beyond the limited notion of accountability as consequences. Every organization we've worked with talks about holding their people accountable. Accountability cannot be imposed, demanded, or coerced. It is an inevitable outgrowth of freedom. As leaders try to hold their people accountable, it puts people on the defensive and unintentionally produces a victim culture. The very act of holding someone accountable leaves no room for the individual to own their actions or the result. Even the most accountable among us naturally push back. People deliver on what they own. As a leader, one of your main jobs is to foster ownership of the things that matter most. That won't happen if you continue to try to hold your associates accountable. I'm not saying you don't confront. I'm not saying you don't apply consequences. Consequences play a role in shaping behavior, but you will never get discretionary effort without ownership. You need to create the space for your people to own it. Here are a few tips on how you can create accountability within your organization. Become aware of victim conversations. Take notice of how you and others in your organization talk about failure. focus those conversations on first acknowledging reality and then on what can be done differently in the future. Remember that the results we get are directly linked to our thinking. Practice a way of thinking and speaking that recognizes ownership of your actions and results. Model accountability. Actions speak louder than words. If you want others to be accountable, then demonstrate accountability in action. Be a role model by making it both expected and safe to embrace accountability. Clarify expectations. Accountability starts with clear expectations. Knowing what is expected is fundamental to individual and organizational accountability. As an individual, you need to be very specific with regard to the results you're targeting and how you will measure success. Learn from life. You will make mistakes. You will not always get the results you're after, especially on the first try. These failures are full of information. Learn to view them as valuable feedback that can be used to improve future outcomes. God has a great way of giving us the same lessons over and over until we learn them. Focus on the future. Accountability is not about the past, but about the future. So often we make judgments about the past as either good or bad, when in many cases the past just is. Forget about blame, forget about guilt, and move forward by focusing on the future and what you can do to get better results. Your thoughts and beliefs regarding accountability shape your actions and the results of the organization. What might be different if your view of accountability shifted? How would your culture be different if you confronted advisors and associates with their freedom? How would that change your role and your relationships with your team? When you as a leader change the way you engage and think about accountability, it will change the conversation, the relationships, the results, and the company. Common pitfalls and success tips. Pitfall 1. You continue to view accountability as consequences. By now, you should be clear that accountability is not the same as consequences. Continuing to treat accountability as consequences will prevent you from achieving your potential and severely limit those you work with. Write it on a sheet of paper and hang it on your wall. Accountability is not consequences, it's ownership. Pitfall 2. You look outside yourself. Waiting for things beyond your control to change is another major pitfall. Whether it's the economy, your company, your boss, or your spouse, waiting for something or someone to change is terribly unproductive and frustrating. Tip 1. Acknowledge reality. As Elizabeth Cady Stanton said, truth is the only safe ground to stand on. Accountability deals in reality. When you take full ownership, there is no room for anything less than honest candor with yourself and with others. The situation is what it is. The only chance you have of improving it starts with acknowledging reality. Tip 2. Focus on what you can control. To be effective, you will want to focus on the things that you can control. You don't control the circumstances or others. The only things you control are your thinking and your actions. Spend your energy on the things you control. Work on keeping your thinking and your actions productive. Chapter 19. 12-Week Commitments. This is an email I received from my friend Mick White. Today is my 36th birthday. This has been on my heart for a while. It's time to share. Nearly 2 years ago, Gregorian calendar, not 12-week year calendar, we went through the 12-week year training. A lot has happened in those 2 years, personally and professionally. I want to share a story about how the 12-week year impacted me personally, as I know you hear all the time about the great things it's doing in our business. In the afternoon, on the second day of the workshop, you walked us through the concept of commitments and you stated the four keys to successful commitments. 1. Burning desire. 2. Clear actions. 3. Count the costs. And 4. Act on commitments, not feelings. As I thought about what I was going to truly commit to doing, like Noah going after the mosquitoes, I wanted a true commitment that would change my life. I remember writing down my commitment and thinking to myself, I hope nobody else sees this, and I certainly hope Brian doesn't call on me to share my commitments. You see, I wrote down that I was going to call my mom every day, Monday through Friday. It seems simple, doesn't it? My mom and I had a beautiful relationship. She was my biggest cheerleader. I was her rock. There was no woman like my mother. From September 30th, 2009 to June 11th, 2011, I called my mom every day, Monday through Friday. We took the weekends off. It wasn't always easy to find the time during the day. It wasn't always convenient. And unfortunately, I'm ashamed to say, at times it felt like a burden. However, I do know this. It was the highlight of my mom's day. Each and every time I called, it was the highlight of her day. Now, looking back, it was the highlight of my day. Because of that commitment I made on October 1st, 2009, my mom and I talked on the phone at least 440 times during those 88 weeks. I have some priceless voicemails, many, many wonderful memories, and a deeper relationship with my mom. Friday, June 11th, 2011, was the last day I ever talked with my mom, as she died unexpectedly on Monday morning, June 13th, 2011. For my current 12-week plan, I wasn't able to add call mom every day, Monday through Friday, as a commitment. There isn't a day that goes by that I don't wish I could call her, and on my birthday, I wish I could hear her voice. The commitment I made changed my life. I'm forever indebted to you. I'm committed to executing my new plan as I work to be the person my mom always thought I was. In this message, I'm struck by how such a seemingly simple commitment can have such a profound effect. Sometimes it's the tiniest of commitments that have the biggest impact when we follow through with them. 12-week commitments can truly be life-changing. The power of commitments. Commitment is the second of the three principles of the 12-week year. It is defined in the American Heritage Dictionary, 4th edition, as the state of being bound emotionally or intellectually to a course of action or to another person or persons. A commitment is a conscious decision to take specific action to create a desired result. Commitments are powerful. In a way, commitment is accountability projected into the future. You decide beforehand that you will do whatever it takes to reach your goal, and the more accountable you are, the more likely you will meet your commitments. Commitment, the state of being bound emotionally or intellectually to some course of action. We all have examples in our lives of the power of commitment. A time when we locked onto a goal or objective and were willing to do whatever it took to reach it. Think back on a time like that for you. What were you feeling as you followed through and kept your commitment? How did it feel to reach your goal? How did it make you feel about your ability to reach other goals? How did the vision of your ultimate goal affect your decisions and actions, even when you were faced with adversity or were tempted to give up? I want to look at commitments on two levels. The first level describes what we refer to as personal commitments, those we make with ourselves. The second is about the commitments we make to others, our word. Let's start with the personal commitments. Personal commitments. A personal commitment is a promise you make with yourself to take specific actions. It may be working out consistently, spending time with the family, stopping smoking, or making a certain number of sales calls each day. Take a few minutes right now and think about two personal commitments that you have made and kept with yourself. Now think about what the results were for you when you kept these commitments. How did you feel about yourself? Was it easier to make and keep other self-promises later on as a result of keeping these? How did you feel about your ability to do whatever it took to get the result, no matter what? In Chapter 9, we discussed how powerful commitments are, and yet there are times when all of us struggle to follow through on the commitments we make. New Year's resolutions are often great examples of this type of struggle. In fact, most New Year's resolutions are abandoned long before the goal is even close to being realized. Let's take a look at why that is. To frame your thinking, we will use an iceberg as a metaphor. As you are probably aware, a small portion of an iceberg, approximately 10%, is above the waterline, with the bulk of the iceberg submerged below the waterline. What I'm suggesting is that human beings are much like icebergs in that, at any moment, there are only a small fraction of our thoughts, emotions, and physical sensations that we are aware of above our waterline of consciousness. Using the iceberg metaphor, where do you think your intentions fall? Above the waterline or below? If you think about it, you will realize that intentions fall both above and below the waterline. What this means is that we have intentions that we are aware of, stated intentions, and those of which we are not aware, hidden intentions. Often, the stated intentions which I am aware of are in conflict with intentions that I am unaware of. Let's look at an example of conflicting intentions. A common New Year's resolution is to lose weight. During our workshop, we often ask the question, who here is overweight by your own standard? Typically, at least half the hands go up. Consider the question for yourself. Are you overweight by your own standard? If your answer is yes, then you have conflicting intentions. At the 10% level, your intention is to reach your ideal weight, but at the 90% level, based on results, you have different intentions. When we ask participants to list some of the hidden intentions, we get the following. I like to eat and don't want to give up the enjoyment of food. I don't want to get out of my warm bed to run in cold weather. I don't want to expend effort. I don't see myself at that weight. I've always been heavy. There is not enough time. Technically, these reasons are the manifestations of deeper intentions, like the desire for comfort, pleasure, satisfaction, relaxation, entitlement, and so on. The point is that often hidden intentions exist below the waterline and conflict with our stated intentions, so we struggle to keep our commitments and follow through on our intentions. Successful commitment occurs when your stated intentions are stronger than your hidden intentions, or when you consciously reconcile the conflict. Let's look at a business example. For many sales professionals, generating consistent referrals can be the difference between success and failure. But even sales reps with a stated intention to ask for a certain number of referrals per week often don't ask. Clearly something is getting in the way. What might be some of the sales reps' hidden intentions regarding asking for referrals? Possible hidden intentions. I haven't earned a referral. I don't want to risk the current sale by asking for a referral. I have a fear of rejection. I don't want to appear needy. I want to be liked. It might make the situation uncomfortable. The probability of a sales rep with a set of hidden intentions like these asking for a referral is close to zero. To be effective, the rep would need to first know that these intentions exist and then reconcile them with the desire to gain referrals. In Chapter 9, we gave you four keys to successful commitments. As a reminder, they are 1. Strong desire. 2. Keystone Actions. 3. Count the costs. 4. Act on commitments, not feelings. Now, let's put these four keys to use. Commitment Exercise. In this exercise, we will have you work through the process of establishing a set of 12-week commitments. From our Achieve website, you can download a worksheet that will guide you through the steps to complete this exercise. 1. First, determine a few goals that would represent a real breakthrough for you in one of the categories in the commitment wheel. Spiritual, spouse, relationship, family, community, physical, personal, or business. Write these goals in the section titled Goal Statements. Remember to state these goals positively and with as much specificity as possible. Make them measurable. As an example, let's use this goal. I will weigh 185 pounds and have 10% body fat. Next, identify the keystone action that will have the biggest impact on reaching your goal. It's important to note that we are not saying that this is necessarily the only action that you will need to take. It's just the one with the greatest impact. Ideally, this action is something that you can engage in daily or weekly. Write one action for each goal in the column labeled Keystone Actions. Sticking with my example of getting in shape, there are a lot of things I can do to lose weight and get fit. The two basic categories are diet and exercise, but within those, I have dozens of choices regarding my nutritional choices and exercise habits. I need to choose one action that, more than any other, will positively impact my fitness. Ideally, it should be catalytic in that it will encourage me to do the other actions as well. Personally, if I work out 4 or more times per week, my eating habits automatically improve, so my keystone action for getting fit is working out. This is an important step because to be successful, you will need not only to commit to your goal, but also, more importantly, commit to your keystone action. Now, determine the costs that you will have to pay to consistently take that action every week. Write those under the box under Commitment Costs. This is where you surface any hidden intentions that may conflict with your stated goal. For example, the costs of working out every day might include giving up TV, cutting back on golf, socializing less, spending less time with family, getting up earlier, and exercising regardless of how tired I feel. The costs of dieting might include giving up some of my favorite foods, reducing the number of times I eat out, and eating smaller portions. Finally, circle the keystone actions for which you are willing to pay the costs. They are now your commitments for the next 12-week year. These are the actions that you will enter into your 12-week plan and execute each week. Commitments to others. The second type of commitment that I want to explore relates to the promises you make to others. To begin to address how to be even more successful in keeping these promises, take a few minutes and answer the questions following. Think about a time when someone promised you something that was very important to you and didn't do it. Describe the situation and how it made you feel. Recall a specific time when you made a commitment to someone else and you didn't come through. How did they feel? How did you feel? What is the impact of broken promises on each party and on their relationships? When we ask participants in our workshops to tell us the results of a broken promise, here are just a few examples of comments we hear. Loss of integrity, loss of confidence in the person who let us down, loss of trust, breakdown in relationship. It's a short list and an ugly one. Not following through on your commitments destroys relationships and contributes to failure and self-esteem issues. Most relational pain comes as a result of broken promises, either explicit or implicit. Explicit promises are your stated word, while implicit promises are inferred. Some common examples of implicit promises are for a father or mother to protect their children from harm, for a spouse to love and comfort their partner, for a leader to provide vision and to act fairly, for a leader to provide training and development. We all have implicit promises with others that we need to be aware of. What are the implicit promises that you have in your professional and personal life? How are you delivering on these? In what ways can you improve? Just as there are steps to making and keeping personal commitments, there are also some key steps to keeping your stated promises with others. A strong desire to keep your word. If your word means little, then you will struggle to keep your promises. If you understand the fallout of broken promises and the benefits of keeping your promises, and if your word is important to you, then you will be more likely to keep your promises with others. Count the costs. Just like with personal commitments, it's important to count the costs before making a promise to someone, even though there are times when it is difficult in the moment to stop and consider them. If you commit, only later to realize that you are unable or unwilling to follow through, renegotiate the promise quickly before it's due. Act on your promises. Similar to personal commitments, there will be times when you just flat out don't feel like following through. Those are the times when you will need to act intentionally on your promises, not your feelings. Thinking shift. To be consistent with your commitments will require you to align your thinking with a few core beliefs. The first is that it is okay to say no. People would rather you say no than break a promise. The challenge is that in the moment, it can be hard to say no because you don't want to disappoint anyone. They are standing right there in front of you, and you have this opportunity to contribute and help them out. It feels so much better to say yes than no, but while saying no may disappoint in the moment, it is so much better in the long run than being overcommitted and not delivering on your promises. It's okay to say no. It really is. Because commitments will require you to sacrifice, in addition to learning to say no, you will need to train yourself to think about and connect with the longer-term benefits versus the short-term inconvenience and discomfort. Delayed gratification is the productive thought. This is not a concept that most people seem interested in, yet it remains the straightest line to your goals. That is why the first key to effective commitments is a strong desire. The commitment mindset is to choose pleasurable results over pleasurable activity. With commitments, and anything you are serious about for that matter, don't give yourself a psychological out. Jim Collins wrote a terrific article for Fast Company entitled Leadership Lessons of a Rock Climber. In it, he introduced the concept of failure versus failure. Jim used his experience as a rock climber to describe the concept. Here's an excerpt. Failure and failure. The difference is subtle, but it is all the difference in the world. In failure, you still do not get up the route, but you never let go. In failure, you fall. In failure, you let go. Going to failure means full commitment to go up. Even if the odds of success are less than 20%, 10%, or even 5%, you leave nothing in reserve, no mental or physical resource untapped. In failure, you never give yourself a psychological out. Well, I didn't really give it everything. I might have made it with my best effort. In failure, you always give your full best, despite the fear, pain, lactic acid, and uncertainty. To the outside observer, failure and failure look similar, though you fly through the air in both cases, but the inner experience of failure is totally different from that of failure. You'll only find your true limit when you go to failure, not failure. Commitments, by definition, demand you go to failure, not failure. Set it in your mind right now that the process is more important than the result. You don't control the result. What you control are your actions. Don't worry that your goal might be too big or that you might fall short. So what? When you make a commitment, don't give yourself an out. The final suggestion as it relates to your thinking is this. You need to know that every time you push through the fear, uncertainty, and doubt that accompanies any challenge, the benefits go far beyond the particular situation and shape who you become in the process. There is something empowering and liberating about knowing if you say you're going to do something that you can count on yourself to come through. Team application. As a leader, your ability to make and keep commitments is essential in building and maintaining strong relationships and a productive workforce. Broken promises drain emotional bank accounts and damage relationships. One of our clients, Jim, the CEO of a successful financial services firm, was meeting with one of his direct reports and sensed an underlying tension. The conversation seemed less open and much more strained than usual, so Jim confronted the problem and asked if anything was wrong. The person pointed out that Jim had agreed to do something, but had failed to follow through with it. Until that moment, Jim had been completely unaware of the broken promise. When he looked back through his notes, sure enough, there it was, his commitment to check on an item and get back within the week. At that point, 2 months had passed since he had made the agreement. What I find interesting about this situation is that the associate had not said anything about it and may have never said anything if Jim hadn't had the insight to notice and the courage to ask. But clearly, it was affecting how he felt about Jim and his working relationship with him. You're not going to be perfect, but as much as possible, be aware of the commitments you make and do everything in your power to deliver on time. If you want a culture that is good at keeping commitments and people who follow through on what they say, then be a role model for your team. Common pitfalls and success tips. Pitfall 1. You miss a commitment once and give up. Sometimes life gets in the way and you are not able to meet your commitments, so you disappoint yourself and others. When this happens, it's important to get right back on the horse. Don't give up. Pitfall 2. You fail to confront missed commitments. A commitment isn't an interest that gets abandoned when it gets difficult. When things get in the way of meeting a commitment, it's important to dig into why. Confront the breakdown right away and recommit to paying the price. In that way, you grow your ability to make and meet commitments in the future. Pitfall 3. You don't value your word. Sometimes we make promises that we can't keep. Many times we know this before we make the promise. We avoid short-term relationship pain by saying yes when we should say no. The problem is that when you break your word, you damage relationships. Others feel that they can no longer trust you. When you value keeping your word, you avoid making promises that you know you cannot or will not keep. Tip 1. Don't overcommit. Commitments are serious. Treat them that way. Don't take on more than you can handle. With personal commitments, 2 or 3 is usually plenty, and in some cases, committing to one thing is even better. With your promises to others, know that most people would rather hear you say no than say yes and not deliver. Tip 2. Go public with your commitments. If you are serious about your commitments, then tell someone you trust. Anytime you tell a friend or coworker about a commitment, it creates an added level of determination on your part to follow through. Tip 3. Buddy up. As with so many things in life, it's easier with a friend. Where possible, find a friend, coworker, or family member to engage along with you. The support and encouragement increase your odds of success and make the process more fun. Chapter 20, Your First 12 Weeks. The purpose of this chapter is to give you a proven path for the next 12 weeks so you can apply the concepts of the 12-week year in your life and in your profession. We wrote this audiobook with the fundamental intent that it could be executed as written. There is nothing else you need to get going with the 12-week year, so let's get started. Research on what it takes to make change happen and to sustain it shows that there are some things that you can do to increase your odds of being successful with the 12-week year. The approach we have outlined in this chapter, as well as the fundamental design of the program itself, leverages what it takes for you to change effectively. As you listen to this chapter, feel free to dip into the relevant chapters in this book for more detail and ideas to support you. It is our deepest desire to help you create new results in your life. As you apply the 12-week year, please email us to let us know how you are doing. The 12-week year is designed to help you perform at your best through more effective execution. But to realize its full value, there are a few things that will help you to increase your odds of success. Resistance monsters. We would all be great if we did not encounter resistance when pursuing our life's intentions. The reality is, the world requires that an effort be expended to accomplish great things. That effort is what stops many from becoming what they are capable of becoming. If you've listened to this audiobook up to this point, you are aware of the many barriers to change. In fact, the emotional cycle of change maps the emotional response to these barriers over time. The good news is that there are simple things that you can do to overcome these barriers, but first it is helpful to be aware of the barriers themselves. The barriers to change are the monsters that you will face before you can reach your goals. Just like the monster under your bed at night when you were six, the resistance monster seems much less scary by the light of day. So, we're going to take a look at some of the most common barriers to change. There are a great many books that dig into the barriers to change. Switch by Chip and Dan Heath. The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg. Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway by Susan Jeffers are a few of our favorites. For a deep dive into the barriers and their solutions, I recommend that you read these powerful books. But for our immediate purposes, I just want to connect the dots between the common barriers to change to establish the rationale for the powerful tools of the 12-week year. The need for immediate gratification. Given a choice, people choose immediate and certain short-term comfort over potential long-term benefits almost every time, unless there is a compelling reason to choose otherwise. What this means is that even if a change could be hugely beneficial when implemented, if the immediate costs outweigh the immediate benefits, many will choose not to engage. To change your tendency to choose comfort over growth, the 12-week year brings your vision into the present via the 12-week goal. The goal links the actions that you take each day as part of your plan to your long-term vision. That's why one of the recommended actions is that you review your vision for at least a few minutes each day. One of our clients who is in sales told us that he secretly hated to meet new people. That was an issue in his sales role, since meeting new prospects in most cases is the required first step to selling something. He told us that the way he overcame that potentially career-ending issue was that he would pull out his vision just before he walked into a meeting with a new prospect, place it over his steering wheel, and read it aloud. In this way, he reconnected with his personal motivation, his why, for doing this job in the first place. By behaving this way each time he met someone new, he reset his in-the-moment benefit-price equation. Rather than choosing his short-term comfort, he chose his vision instead, and in the process, he chose to meet with new prospects. His vision and his daily actions were intentionally and powerfully aligned. big change, and multiple goals. A research study by Amy N. Dalton and Stephen A. Spiller found that the benefits of planning diminish rapidly, if not altogether, if you pursue and plan with more than one goal. The study posited that in itself, the act of planning for multiple goals discouraged people when they were forced to consider all of the obstacles, constraints, and foregone pleasurable activities involved in reaching their goals. Intuitively, this makes some sense. When people are confronted with a big project, such as cleaning a very messy house with multiple rooms, and many sub-projects, such as piled high laundry and dirty carpets, they can feel overwhelmed and ultimately fail to take any action at all. This also makes sense in the context of the emotional cycle of change introduced in Chapter 12. The shift from the first stage of change, uninformed optimism, to the second stage, informed pessimism, begins with the development of a written plan that identifies the cost that must be paid to reach the goal. The way that you think about the magnitude of the execution effort affects your willingness to take action. Imagine for a moment that you have a plan to balance your personal budget, a weight loss goal with a diet and exercise plan, a plan to get married in 6 months, and, to top it off, you have just taken a new job as a goal-based project manager. Now, imagine that you add one more goal with a plan on top of all that. You decide, for example, to drive from Cleveland to Chicago to attend a wedding this coming Saturday. On top of everything else on your plate, you have added a new goal to attend the wedding and a new plan, the directions to get there. According to the research, you should be overwhelmed and rejecting plans altogether, making decisions on what feels right in the moment. That's not what you do, though, is it? In fact, you get in your car and using the directions you arrive on time and attend the wedding. How is that possible? Well, of course, the answer is obvious. You are only executing against one goal at a time when you are driving. You are not completing a project, balancing your checkbook, or exercising while you drive. You compartmentalize and set aside the divergent goals and their actions, and you focus instead on executing your directions one turn at a time until you reach your goal. You don't think about the trip in a way that overwhelms you. It turns out that using that trip approach works with your other goals as well. The drive confines your focus because you physically cannot do anything else while you drive. You might think about your other goals during the times between lane changes and map checks, on a long stretch of interstate, for example. But when you are actively making turns, all you are doing is focusing on driving. In the book Switch, Chip and Dan Heath point out that when your perception of the magnitude of a big change shrinks in your thinking, you are more likely to achieve your goal. It's important to note that the ultimate goal doesn't shrink. It is just your thinking about it that matters. The Dalton and Spiller study also confirms this. It found that if you think that your plan to reach multiple goals actually is manageable, then you are more likely to execute it, and planning becomes beneficial for multiple goals as well. If you think your plan is manageable, you will execute it and benefit from it. In other words, the way you think about your plan affects your ability to execute. Switch describes two ways to shrink change. First, limit the initial investment in time. For example, spend 5 minutes cleaning. And second, set progress milestones that are quickly within reach. Clean the small bathroom. By doing this, you're thinking about the magnitude of your change shifts, and you can get unstuck and begin to act. The 12-week year is designed to create a sense of measurable progress right out of the gate. In fact, at this point in your listening, you've already successfully taken the first few steps in your first 12-week year just by getting this far. In 12 weeks, your progress is visible and immediate. Your first day with your first weekly plan puts you in an elite group of people who are acting to reach new heights in their lives. If you implement the routines of the 12-week year, you are immediately acting to become proficient at execution, a skill that will pay great dividends for the rest of your life. The disciplines of the 12-week year also keep you on track even when you have multiple goals. When you set near-term 12-week goals with daily and weekly actions, you have, in essence, turn-by-turn directions to achieve each goal. In addition, you track immediate progress each day, while each week you allocate time in your strategic blocks to keep you focused on one goal and action at a time. Taken together, the components of the 12-week system help you get through the multiple goal barrier to execution one day at a time. Old habits. Your current actions are creating your current results. To create new results, to reach your 12-week goal, for instance, you will have to do things differently and do different things. The problem is that your existing environment and your old triggers provoke you to continue with your old behavior loops, your old habits. In his book, The Power of Habit, Charles Duhigg describes a 4-step approach to overcome old habits and to create new ones. And one of the key steps he identifies is to work from a plan, a written action plan. What psychologists call implementation intentions helps to create new behaviors even in the presence of your old environmental triggers. A plan creates a new set of conscious action choices that can help produce new results in an old environment. The weekly execution routine of the 12-week year creates a new execution environment with a set of new action cues and planned behaviors that change everything. If you consistently apply the weekly routine, your 12-week goal will likely become a reality. Victim thinking. Sometimes people give away their power to the external by seeing their barriers as insurmountable. They would be great, but their circumstances won't let them. As long as you see the solution to your greatness as being outside of you, you will remain powerless to change. The reality is that the only things you control are the way you think and the way you act. Everything else you can only try to influence. Personal accountability, ownership of your vision, goals, and plan is the single most important thing that you can do to become great. Listen again to chapters 8 and 18 to remind yourself of the power of accountability as ownership. They are probably the most powerful chapters in this audiobook. Your first 12 weeks. Your first 12-week year may well be your most important. If you decide to dabble with the 12-week year to get familiar with it, you probably won't see great results. Here is Casey Johnson's experience with dabbling at first, and then what happened when he committed to fully engaging with the system. To get the most value from the 12-week year, my advice to you is to sell out to it from the get-go. Set your ego aside and acknowledge that someone else might know some things that you don't, and they might be able to help you get better. I was first introduced to the 12-week year in March when my firm hosted a 2-day training session with the authors of the book. At first, I wasn't bought in. I dabbled with the concept and didn't see much in terms of improvement. I thought that I already knew what I needed to do to be successful, and I felt that there wasn't anything that I could learn from the 12-week year. It turns out I was wrong. 3 months later, in July, my results were not where I wanted them to be, and they were well below what I felt I was capable of delivering. At that point, I was presented with the opportunity to hire a 12-week year coach, and I took it. I decided that I would fully engage with the 12-week year for the first time. As I look back now, that first 12 weeks of full engagement was all about setting up the habit of executing the 12-week year process. I set a goal that was a stretch for me, and I built a plan that focused on driving my weekly business building activity, asking for referrals in every meeting, and conducting 6 openers, face-to-face sales calls, each week. I worked to build in the process of using a weekly plan, and I scored myself each week. By the way, don't lie about your score. It won't push you to get better if you do. I met with my coach and attended a WAM each week to help me confront my performance breakdowns. I changed many things, but the most important might have been that I started to value my time much more than I used to. Time spent has an opportunity cost. Now, if I am not tenacious about spending it on my highest value activities, I feel like I'm losing money. After my first 12 weeks, I had the 12-week year successfully installed. My activity was up, and the results were starting to appear. By the end of my second 12 weeks, I had closed more business than I had in the previous year and a half. In my company's annual life, sales promotion, I was the number 4 agent in the country for delivered first-year commissions at my experience level. I had done okay the year before, but my name wasn't even on the list of top performers. It is now. I tell everybody that will listen that if you are thinking about the 12-week year, don't dabble. Engage. Casey's story is exciting, but it isn't unique. The 12-week year can help you reach your goals faster than you ever thought possible. The key is to fully engage in the first 12 weeks. To apply the 12-week year well, you will need more intentionality regarding how you think and act each day and week. The good news is that the 12-week year is designed to help you do exactly that. Every 12 weeks has a pattern, similar in many ways to a 12-month year. The first repeating pattern that happens every 12 weeks is to set or reconnect with your long-term vision. The good news is that you have probably already accomplished this step. If not, I suggest that you go to Chapter 13 and create your vision. After you have determined your vision, the next step in your first 12-week routine is to set a 12-week goal that represents progress toward your vision and that is a great result in and of itself. Once your goal is set, you will build a 12-week plan to reach it. Creation or refinement of your vision, goal, and plan is something that happens before each 12-week year begins. Your first 12-week year is unique. In fact, it's helpful to frame it in 3 4-week periods. Your first 4 weeks. Studies have shown that when you are introduced to a new concept or habit, the sooner and more often you act on it, the more likely it is that you will incorporate it into your daily routine. If the next 12 weeks is going to be a breakthrough for you, it will be because you decided to do the things necessary to drive your performance to new levels. Use the tools and concepts of the 12-week year to effectively work the plan that you have created. Take the time each week for the strategically important items that matter most over the long term. Focus on the foundational practices of the 12-week year and make them yours as quickly as you can. Install the weekly routine and make these 3 steps your new habits. 1. Plan your week. 2. Score your week. 3. Participate in a weekly accountability meeting. To help you execute better, it's important to also block your time and track your key measures. Decide right now to commit to staying on track for your first 4 weeks. The first 4 weeks are critical. These weeks are all about getting a fast start toward your goal and establishing the 12-week year as your execution system. In your first 4 weeks, use the weekly routine to get some early successes and to establish some new habits. A good start makes the end goal more attainable. Don't start a week without a weekly plan. Each week, take a few minutes and score your execution. Score from week 2 on. There is nothing to score until you have finished week 1. Attend your weekly accountability meetings and engage. Pay attention to your scores, track your progress, and respond to any performance breakdowns. Your second 4 weeks. You probably know people who tend to start strong with new things, but then abandon them before they experience the full results. Don't do that. Seriously, once you start the 12-week year, it gets easier and easier each week. It becomes your routine. The second 4 weeks are important because the newness of the 12 weeks has worn off, and the end of the year is still a way off. There might not be as much urgency for you.